Thank you very much, and it is once again a privilege to be here and appreciate the work that's being done so well here at the Congregation Shenandoah and the lectureships that are continued year after year. I would have to correct that while I certainly am still working at the congregation there at Schertz, we also have Stan Crowley, and at this time he's doing most of the pulpit work, and that hasn't left me without anything to do. I'm still quite occupied in many, many ways, and Stan, of course, is an asset to the congregation there. Question, as has been posed among the many questions that have been considered, again, is whom do men say that I, the Son of Man, am? When you think about the questions that people might pose with regard to just exactly who are you, you may have had occasion to have someone ask that of yourself, or you may have asked that of others. Someone knock on the door, and you ask who's at the door, and the response that they give may very well determine whether you open the door or not. A couple of weeks ago, I was at the church building at about 9:30, 10 o'clock in the evening, and there was a knock on the window. And there was a young man, I would guess was about 14 or 15 years of age. He didn't look to be under the influence of anything, didn't appear to be running from anything. He was appropriately dressed, and I could hear him through the window, of course, could hear the knock. I asked him what he wanted, and he said he wanted in the church building. And I asked him, well, what for? And he said, well, never mind, and disappeared. I, of course, still don't know, and I guess I might very well have asked, who are you? But I think if he had been someone that I immediately recognized and was knocking on the door, I would have reached the conclusion that he had simply come and forgotten to have any keys, and seeing the light on in that room and knocked on the window, and I would have immediately gone and opened the door for the individual because I recognized him. It's rather ironic, but just a few moments ago, my son and his family came in, and granddaughter looked at me and said, who are you? I thought at first she was making some kind of a play with regard to the topic. However, she was looking at my name tag. And it just so happens that my last name is misspelled. So she was therefore asking, who are you? Well, this is not really then an uncommon type of question that is posed. And it is only natural that at some point that Jesus would be asking such a question. Well, the apostles might have wondered with regard to it, because after all, they had been with him at this point for some time, and then for him to be saying, well, who do men say that I, the Son of Man, am? Well, don't you know what they are saying? Well, of course Jesus knew what was in the hearts and the minds of individuals. He knew what their thinking was, but he wanted to know what they were observing, and ultimately he wanted to know what they themselves believed concerning him. Very appropriate question. When you look at all that had been taking place, individuals should rightly have been reaching a conclusion that would have not posed one that was difficult at all. We can see some other instances where individuals, though erroneous, at least in one instance, nevertheless reached an appropriate conclusion in their own minds with regard to the situation. I call your attention to the 14th chapter of the book of Acts. And there the Apostle Paul and Barnabas had come to Lystra. There was an individual who was born lame. We know that Paul, through the power of the Lord, enabled that man to walk. And one of the great things, as we note with respect to the miracles that were performed by the Lord, and for that matter by the apostles and those who were given the miraculous abilities, is that they were complete. If you think about an individual who has never walked, an adult, much less a child, but has never walked, and to immediately be able to walk. That's astounding. Even individuals today who have been sick and in bed for some time may find that they're a bit wobbly when they get back on their feet. And so for an individual immediately who has never walked to get up and to do so is a very astounding thing. What was the reaction of those heathen people? And that's exactly what they were. They may have been educated, but religiously, they certainly had no concept with regard to the God of heaven that we know. They reached what was, I believe, a very natural conclusion for them, and that was that Paul and Barnabas were gods. And as a result of this, just this one incident, they were ready to offer sacrifices to them. But, of course, this was not the situation during the ministry of Christ. This was not the reaction of the Jews. It is the reaction that, of course, should have come, but it was not. Jesus had been laying something of a foundation from the very beginning of his ministry, and the very type of thing on which you and I must make our determination as to just who is this individual that we call Jesus. The things which Jesus began to say from the moment of his ministry and on to the very end of his life and even until he departed and returned to the Father was helping to prepare them for the work that was to be done and, of course, to convince them as to just exactly who he was and is. And we need to look at the Scriptures from that standpoint because even though we may grow up in a Christian home, as many here I'm sure have, and have been taught from our youth concerning Jesus, there comes a point in our life when we must make our individual determination. And we must decide for ourselves as to whether we believe these things or not. And that transition will come to each individual as they reach the point of becoming an adult. The teachings of Jesus had been something obviously quite different from what the people were accustomed to. Because they indicated that Jesus spoke as one with authority and they were amazed at his doctrine. I suspect a lot of what they were hearing from the Jewish teachers was that of Jewish tradition that had been developed over the years so that it almost, in many instances, obscured the law that had been given by Moses. And Jesus had cut thoroughly through all of that and had gotten to the very heart of the message of the law and the prophets. And he was bringing it fresh to their minds. But not only was it the message that he was speaking, but it was also that which he was doing. And we're quite familiar with the multitude of miracles that he performed, and very clearly he performed many more things than what have been recorded. But those things that have been recorded have been put there for our learning and that we might believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. You'll recall, of course, that he turned the water into wine. You'll remember the many other miracles, such as healing those who had leprosy, a very dreaded and incurable disease. That he had healed individuals, such as the lady who touched the hem of his garment and had a flow of blood for some 12 years and spent all of her living on doctors who, I'm sure, even if they were the most honest and the best of the doctors of that day and time, they nevertheless could not cure her. And yet she was immediately cured by simply touching the garment that Jesus wore. He caused the blind to see, the dumb to speak. He caused the deaf to hear, the lame to walk. We know that he fed the multitudes with a few small fishes and loaves. And even after having fed them, he filled baskets filled with the remains of that food. He cast out the demons. And everything then was subject unto him. He walked on water, stilled the storms, raised those who were dead from the grave. There was virtually nothing but what he was capable of dealing with it. Not only with regard to that which was miraculous, but among the multitudes that followed him, there were always those individuals that were seeking to find some fault with him, to be able to trip him up in that which he would say, hopefully on his own words, to be able to find some error in that which he taught, or to pose a question which he could not answer, and thus to find some fault with him. But in every instance, they not only failed completely, but they came out as looking somewhat foolish for even having confronted him. It's no wonder that the common people received him not only gladly, but quickly recognized that he was the Son of God. But we know that these were not the only individuals, and that there were many who did not feel that way. We're dealing, of course, with what men have to say concerning him, but we know in addition to what men have to say that even the demons had acknowledged that he was the Son of God. And the Father also, on several occasions, acknowledged that Jesus was his Son. But with regard to men, you'll remember that on one instance that John, while he was in prison, sent several of his disciples to Jesus. And the inquiry that they were making was whether he was the one that was being looked for, or should they look for yet another. That might come from what might appear to be something of a strange source, with John having raised this issue. Perhaps John, thinking in terms of the fact that maybe he wasn't going to live all that much longer, that his work was virtually done, and wanting to be comforted a bit, or feeling more confident, if need be, that indeed the Messiah was there. This would have been, no doubt, a wonderful opportunity for Jesus simply to have said, "Yes, I am the one that the prophet spoke of." And we know that there were several occasions when Jesus did very openly say that he was the Son of God, that he was the Messiah. Jesus didn't do that. And there's no question it was the appropriate response that he ultimately gave. What did he do? He said, "Observe, look, and see." And this is one recording, 11th chapter of the book of Matthew, beginning with verse 4, when Jesus answered and said unto them, "Go and show John again those things which ye do hear and see. The blind receive their sight, and the lame walk. The lepers are cleansed, and the deaf hear. The dead are raised up, and the poor have the gospel preached to them, and blessed is he whosoever shall not be offended in me." Whether we recognize it or not, there has to be some type of thought process that is going on, and you and I engage in something of a similar thought process as we engage situations of this nature, even asking, "Who is this individual?" Part of it, and very clearly the prominent portion here, is with regard to the works that Jesus was doing. What's the source of these works, these miracles? What is the source of the power itself? And there would be others who would ask this type of a question. By what authority do you do these things? There's no question with respect to the old law, and it's certainly reflected within the new. And also with regard, not just within the law as it was given, but certainly in that which reflected throughout both the Old Testament and the new. And that is that those things that are good come from God. They're blessings from Him. Every good and perfect gift comes from God. And it is God who is attuned to those who are righteous. And His back is, in essence, turned against those who are wicked and will not heed His commands. Even with Jeremiah, God had been very specific in telling him, don't even pray for these people, with reference to the Jews there in Jerusalem and Judea. I won't even listen with regard to it. And so the issue then is, what is the source of all of this? It can only really come from two different places. One is, it is either of God or it is of Satan. It's from one source or the other. Whatever you might otherwise say with regard to Jesus. But with very little reflection with regard to both God and Satan, and with listening to what Jesus had to say, as well as what He did, and then to observe the nature of His lifestyle. Because He did not go about as an individual who was wealthy. He was not seeking out that which He could obtain for His own personal gain. As He Himself indicated, He didn't even have a home that He could call His own. No one could point to Him and in any way think or accuse Him of doing what He was for His own personal benefit. Any honest observation surely could lead one to no other conclusion that He must be from God. And if they paid any attention whatsoever to what the prophets had said, they would have also very readily come to the conclusion that this is the Son of God. This is the one of whom the prophets spoke. As I thought about some of these things, I couldn't help but think about several situations, and you probably are like me, that you get phone calls from these telemarketers. Unless you've managed. We signed up with the state. You only had to pay a small amount, and they were supposed to eliminate. I don't think they've eliminated one. I'd hate to think in terms of what I would have gotten if they've managed to eliminate some. But I've had some that were just truly amazing. One individual called, and I don't know where he got my name or what he made him think that I would even have the money to invest, but he wanted me to invest in something other, don't even remember now, and he told me how he had 22 years experience in investments. And I told him, well, even if I had the money, you know, I don't know you. I have no reason to believe you, and even if you say you have 22 years of experience, I don't know that that is true, nor do I know the quality of that experience, the success that you have had in it. And I think he felt a bit insulted and got a bit angry, and as I recall, he hung up on me. I wasn't trying to be mean with him, but I couldn't quite visualize why he perceived that I should invest. And another one that was even as astounding wanted to sell me some shares in some oil drilling that was being contemplated. And he reminded me how that we had had an oil shortage and difficulty in getting gas a few years ago, and how that if I invested in this, and think if it all went well, that you wouldn't have to worry about it anymore. But, you know, it immediately came to my mind that even if I had an oil well in my backyard, I wouldn't have any more gasoline. I couldn't run that oil. If I could get it directly out of the ground into my car, I couldn't run the car on it. It still would have to be refined. And I suggested likewise to him that even if I had the money and was interested, I would have to want to check with those who were quite knowledgeable. And he said, well, you don't have to worry about that. Here, I've got a fellow sitting right next to me. He can answer any questions you want. Well, clearly it was probably just another telemarketer. But in any event, what am I saying? When you know individuals and you know their background, you've been able to observe them, you have heard them, you know what the nature of their life is, and whatever you're interested in and they're supposed to have the expertise in it, you know because of your own observation and of what has happened to them within the community over a period of time. You have built up a belief and a confidence, and there is no question in your mind with regard to them. But with other individuals that might come forth and might speak of some great and glorious things with regard to themselves, but you don't know them, then you have no reason to have confidence or belief in them. But that which Jesus had been doing and saying, and the nature of his life, and that which had been indicated by the prophets that Jesus was constantly in the process of fulfilling throughout his entire days here upon this earth, provided the basis upon which those people and people down through the ages can still read and learn concerning him and can say without any hesitancy that this is the Christ. This is the Son of God, and there can be no other that can ever come to this earth that will even come close with respect to this. There were others, of course, that had their own thoughts with regard to Jesus. We know that there were the common people that I have made mention of, and the publicans, who as they listened to both John and then to Jesus, they came and came willingly, and they submitted themselves unto Jesus and to John and to the baptism. The scribes and the Pharisees, the Jewish rulers, of course, did not. And Jesus would point out, I'm sure on more than one occasion, the inconsistency of their conduct. Notice, for example, still in the 11th chapter of Matthew, after speaking to those who had been sent from John, provided an opportunity for him to speak further, and down in verse 16 he said, "But whereunto shall I liken this generation? It is like unto children sitting in the markets and calling unto their fellows and saying, We have piped unto you, and ye have not danced. We have mourned unto you, but ye have not lamented." You know, what does it really take to appeal to you people? What is it can we reach you with? It doesn't make any difference what is said or what is done. You're going to reject it. And he went on, saying, "For John came, neither eating nor drinking, and they say, He hath a devil. The Son of Man came, eating and drinking, and they say, Behold, a man gluttonous and a winebibber, a friend of publicans and sinners, but wisdom is justified of her children." And there are sometimes people who are just like that, and obviously that's the way the Jewish leaders were. It really wasn't going to make any difference ultimately what was said or done or who did it. They simply were not going to believe in him. Well, what were some of the other things that people were saying? We know from the very question that Jesus had posed when he asked the disciples and his apostles there in the 16th chapter of Matthew, "Of whom do you men say that I, the Son of Man, am?" Well, they gave him some responses. It's regrettable that in this there was no indication that men were saying that you are the Christ. They said, "Some say that thou art John the Baptist, some Elias, and others Jeremiah, or one of the prophets." I don't know if they would have gone further or not. Jesus then had asked them, "But whom say ye that I am?" Now, previous to this, at least as recorded by Matthew, they had already made something of a response with regard to this. As recorded back over in the 14th chapter of the book of Matthew. And this was when they were in the ship, except for Jesus, and Jesus came walking on the water. That within itself should have been sufficient to have made individuals believe. But in any event, it has the account with respect to this, and Peter and his attempt to walk on the water. And thereafter, he has come into the ship, and the wind had ceased. We're told in verse 33, "And they that were in the ship came and worshipped him, saying, Of a truth, thou art the Son of God." But Jesus obviously wanted something more from them and wanted them to affirm their belief. And I think that it was quite important to him that they say this, though I have no doubt Jesus knew precisely what was in their heart. There were others, however, that while these men were making that type of a comment that you might recall, that were saying such things as, "Can anything good come out of Nazareth?" Or, "Search the Scriptures with regard to Galilee, and there's nothing that reflects that the Messiah is going to come out of that area. If you begin to look about at all the different comments of individuals during the ministry of Christ, it reminds me of something of that of gossip, and how that individuals will pick up on something, and first thing you know, it is just being bannered about, and everybody has an opinion with regard to it, and just about anything you can imagine is being said. And yet, with respect to it, in most things, it takes very little of an effort to actually check for yourself. Those who had questioned as to where Jesus came from could, I think, have very readily have checked and have determined where he was actually born. But as far as I know, it's certainly not recorded that anybody made that kind of an effort. There would have been no difficulty to have gone and to have observe for themselves with regard to what Jesus was otherwise doing and asked him very plainly, "Are you Jeremiah or are you one of the other prophets?" And I don't think there's any question as to the answer that Jesus would have given. But it was a lot more fun of engaging in all of that conversation. Others, of course, might be like the Jewish leaders. And I can't help, as I think about some of them, of thinking about The Fiddler on the Roof, the movie, and the song that "If I Were a Rich Man," and all of the influence that one would have and what he would be able to do. Be the same individual, wouldn't have any more education, anything otherwise would just suddenly be a rich man. And we see this within our society and probably have all the way down through the ages, that when people are wealthy, when they are in positions of authority, when they perhaps have more education, they're looked upon as knowing more and being wiser than anybody else. And I'm surprised when some of the people from Hollywood in particular end up speaking as though they were authority before Congress on a particular matter simply because they acted in a movie that dealt with it. And for the life of me, I have failed to see how that can make them an expert. But we look at the Jewish leaders, and individuals of this nature were responsible for providing the leadership, and we see the nature of the leadership that they were providing. What were their accusations? Well, that the work that he is doing, that it is of the devil. And as they spoke to the man who was born blind, that Jesus gave him sight, and they say, "Well, we don't know of this man other than that he is a sinner. Give God the glory." And even when they went to stone Jesus and he asked them for which of his good works did they stone him, they said, "We're not going to stone you for your good works, but for the fact that you make yourself equal with God." Yet where again could all of these good works have possibly come from? And all of the good words that he spoke that they couldn't at all refute, it had to have come from God, but they would never acknowledge it. The people would glorify God, but they would not. I made mention with regard to the man who was born blind, as recorded in the 9th chapter of the book of John. This is to me a very tremendous individual, and I think that's one reason why so much attention is given to it. Other individuals were given sight, but here was a man that was an adult, born blind. Jesus has spoke to him and has told him to go after anointing his eyes to wash the pool of Siloam, and he doesn't really know who it was who had given him his sight. When the Jewish leaders learned concerning this, and they had already determined that those who acknowledged Jesus would be put out of the synagogue, they went to the parents, and the parents were afraid of the Jews, and so they said, "Talk to him. He's of age." This individual stood right up to them. And his comment to them, in effect, was, you know, you've been told already. You want me to tell you again? Will you be his disciples? And when they accused Jesus of being a sinner, this man spoke up and said, why, hearing is a marvelous thing, that ye know not from whence he is, and yet he's opened my eyes. Now we know that God heareth not sinners, but if any man be a worshiper of God and doeth his will, him he heareth. And of course he went on to ultimately say, if this man were not of God, he could do nothing. This man went again right to the very basics, and he understood and accepted very clearly. And this was one of the instances when Jesus found this man, identified himself as being the Messiah. He didn't do that in too many cases, but he did it in this instance. Well, there are any number of other cases, and obviously our time is virtually gone. We might very well look more closely with regard to the Romans, and particularly with regard to Pilate. We might consider the thieves on the cross, and particularly the one who must have heard concerning Jesus. And as they viewed the crowd that was around them, and the attention was not on them, it was on Jesus, and they could see the individuals who were railing upon Jesus. But they could also see the sign that proclaimed Jesus as being the King of the Jews. And the one who was hanging on the cross, who knew that he was going to soon die, and apparently would well recognize that Jesus apparently was going to die physically also, and yet nevertheless would say, Lord, remember me in your kingdom. No wonder Jesus then would say that this man would be with him in paradise. And so it is that each would speak, and if you could wander about the countryside, you would have picked up many observations with regard to the individuals as to just exactly who Jesus was. But just as they had to make that determination then, so it is that ultimately today, the same decision must be made, and you're going to find people of a great variety of different attitudes with regard to him, much as there was then. But we must be sure that if we are to have the hope of eternal life, that we very willingly and openly, not like Nicodemus, as far as we never know, never really fully recognize, though he did, even at the point of Jesus' death, bring spices to anoint his body. But he never did come to real defense or open acknowledgement of Jesus as the Son of God that I'm aware of. Hopefully he did. But we must openly and unashamed speak of Jesus, believe in Jesus, as being just exactly who the Scriptures proclaim, the Son of God. Thank you.